This recording, Montserrat 1, is copyright the International Dialects of English Archive. Comma Gets a Cure is copyright Douglas N. Onaroff, Jill McCullough and Barbara Somerville.
Well, here's a story for you. Sarah Perry was a veterinary nurse who had been working daily at an old zoo in a deserted district in the territory. So she was very happy to start a new job in a superb private practice in North Square, near Duke Street Tower. That area was much nearer to her and more to her liking. Even so, on the first morning, she felt stressed. She ate a bowl of porridge, checked herself in the mirror, and washed her face in a hurry. Then she put on a plain yellow dress and a fleece jacket, picked up her kit, and headed for work. When she got there was a woman with a goose waiting for her. The woman gave Sarah an official letter from the vet. The letter implied that the animal could be suffering from a rare form of foot and mouth disease, which was surprising, because normally you'd expect to see it in a dog or goat. Sarah was sentimental, so this made her feel very sorry for the beautiful bird. Before long, that itchy goose began to strut around the office like a lunatic, which made an unsanitary mess. The goose's owner, Mary Harrison, kept calling, "Comma, comma," which Sarah thought was an odd choice of name. Comma was strong and huge, so it would take some force to trap her. But Sarah had a different idea. First, she tried gently stroking the goose's lower back with a palm, then singing a tune to her. Finally, she administered ether. Her efforts were not futile. In no time, the goose began to tire, so Sarah was able to hold on to Comma and give her a relaxing bath. Once Sarah had managed to bathe the goose, she wiped her off with a cloth and laid her on her right side. Then Sarah confirmed the vet's diagnosis. Almost immediately, she remembered an effective treatment that required her to measure out a lot of medicine. Sarah warned that this course of treatment might be expensive, either 5 or 6 times the cost of penicillin. I can't imagine paying so much, but Mrs. Harrison, a millionaire lawyer, thought it was a fair price for a cure. I mean, it's Pompeii. It didn't happen immediately. You know, we had explosions, you know, little fire up in the mountains. But we don't have, you know, like in Hawaii, you have those lava volcanoes. Ours is a mud volcano. So what you get is hot rocks and hot air. That is more dangerous than a volcano with lava, because this comes down the mountainside at a terrific speed, and everything in front of it is just burnt and destroyed. It's called a pyroclastic flow. So that was the danger. They knew what kind of volcano it was and the kind of destruction it could do. And then all of a sudden, we had to get out of there. I don't think anybody can understand what it's like when somebody comes to you and says, "Okay, listen, grab a bag, pack 2 days' worth of clothes in it, get your important documents, come with us." And the first thought was, okay, what do you take? Where is everything? You grab your passports, you probably grab your documents, insurance, education, that sort of thing, if you can find them, if you know where you put them. Do you take pictures? You can't take your television, you can't take your music, really. You know, but, and then your clothes, what do you take? Where are you going to go? Do you need shoes? And it's just one bag. Yeah. So you have no idea what it's like. And then you're taken away. If you're lucky, you go to a friend's house that on the other side of the island. And you stay there not knowing, you know, how long, when do you get to go home? Because nobody knew what it was. It sounded like a plane. A plane somewhere in the distance, flying. And you're like, well, why doesn't that plane go away? Why doesn't it land? And it went on for like 2 days. And then we found out after that, they were saying it was coming from the volcano. That noise, the volcano was making that noise. And then they had some geography people coming from Trinidad. And they were going to come and check out what's going on with the volcano. And then, you know, they had their meetings. They had their meetings with the government. And they had to say, like, okay, everybody on this side of the island, you have to move. Now, if you're not paying attention to anything, somebody knocks on your door, listen, you have an hour. or 2 hours. You have to move. We don't know what's going on with the volcano. We must save lives. You know, grab your things. Let's go. And that's what happened to a lot of people. They grabbed what they could, packed the days with the clothes, probably put some food stuff if they had any, and they probably went to friends' house. Those who didn't have anybody to go to, they were ended up in churches and schools on the northern side of the island. For me, it was just moving back to my parents' house. You know, we were in the middle of a production. All of us, I think there were like there were 3 people in the group, and we were in this house with the producer. And we're doing so much work that we, you know, things that we've never done before. We're doing video stuff. We're building our own lights because we had no, you know, proper light stuff. We're making all these things. We just practically lived together in this house. And so this whole business of volcano and, you know, it wasn't the big thing in our life. Our thing was this production that we're doing, this amazing production we're creating. And, you know, all this rubbish about volcanoes, you know. Secondary. Yeah, okay, I think this would be a strong Montserrat accent. Her efforts were not futile. In no time, the goose began to tire. So Sarah was able to hold on to Comma and give her a relaxing bath.